This is All In. I'm Matt Pelzer. The Big Ten Conference postponed football and all other fall sports until at least the spring semester. Today we're talking about how the decision was made and what the impact could look like. And if you have questions or comments on our show today, we are on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. Just give your name, where you're calling from, and a quick question or comment. We will do our best to get it into the conversation today. And again, that's 866-476-3881. Joining me now is Zach Osterman, who covers IU athletics and college sports for the Indy Star. Zach, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So there's been a lot of uncertainty about if and how college sports would happen this year. The news out of the Big Ten Conference was that all fall sports would be postponed until at least the spring semester. Was this decision to postpone anticipated?
Well, I think that's where we kind of arrive at one of the many layers of intrigue around this. There's been a lot of criticism of the Big Ten in particular for the lack of transparency, kind of certainly leading up to, but I would say even more so kind of in the aftermath of this decision. The Big Ten hasn't really explained itself to the extent that I think satisfies athletes, coaches, even parents. A lot of that is, of course, centered around football, but I think it applies to other fall sports as well. You know, was it anticipated? I think there was certainly a growing level of pessimism. You know, as we were getting through July and into early August, and teams were going to basically need either to know that things were being suspended, postponed, or that they were given the green light to begin practicing, because obviously you need an amount of time to get your athletes ready physically, you know, to be conditioned to play a season. You know, the conferences, the schools were, I don't want to say they were just putting on a good face. They were trying to remain optimistic publicly, but I think it's fair to say that you know, just in the sort of the general background noise of college sports, did not engender a lot of optimism. And that's because of the wider situation in the country right now, the feeling that the spread of COVID-19 in many, many communities just is nowhere near checked to the point of being able to have these, you know, even mass gatherings. When I say that, I'm not obviously not talking about fans in the stands, but even, you know, if you have a college football game, there's probably 350 people on the field, maybe not quite that many, but that's still a very large number of people, many of whom have to come in very close contact with one another over and over again. And I think that it's fair to say that while everyone had sort of hoped that we might have been in a better place by the fall, you know, the closer we got, the less likely it looked.
So who makes this decision? Who made, I guess, this final decision for the Big Ten?
Yeah, so this would have been the Big Ten's Council of Presidents and Chancellors. This kind of thing is voted on by the presidents. And obviously everyone kind of, you know, one of the things that's being exposed in all of this that I think we maybe all knew in a passive way, but we never saw kind of brought to one big head the way it is happening right now, is just how decentralized the leadership structure of college athletics can be. Because, you know, in the Big Ten, for example, your coaches meet all the time. They have authority over certain things like rules. Your ADs meet all the time. They have authority over certain things. And then your presidents and chancellors meet all the time, and they have authority over certain things. And then people kind of want to turn to the NCAA and say, well, is it your job to lead? But the NCAA has to hold its hands up and say, listen, we're a member-driven organization. We exist at the behest of our member schools. You know, we can't just sort of go rogue and start telling them what to do without, you know, some level of support. And ultimately, the conferences in this case wanted to be more independent, because it made it easier to basically say, well, if we only have to worry about the public health situation in 14 states and 14 cities, that's a lot more manageable to trying to come up with protocol for a safe season than if we're just sort of all existing as one, you know, loose confederation, the way that college sports has been for many years now. So the final decisions on these things are coming from the presidents and chancellors, and that includes the Big Ten. But there has been a feeling, you know, a lot of different stakeholders pushing for a larger role in the decision-making process, not least the athletes themselves.
You mentioned other conferences that have not yet made a decision, and the ones, of course, that have, Big Ten being one of them. I mean, was this a waterfall? Are we in the middle of the waterfall? Do we expect more announcements like this?
There's certainly not an expectation right now, in the sense that I don't think anyone is, you know, beginning to soften the ground for something very soon. But I do think that there is, again, if, you know, we've kind of reverted back to the way things were in the summer, where the people who want to go forward are trying to be optimistic. They're trying to do everything they can, but the background noise is not very positive. Greg Byrne, who's the athletic director at the University of Alabama, tweeted out some pictures that he saw of students, you know, lining up in close quarters without masks, many of them in off-campus bars, and basically, you know, saying, if you want to have a football season, we just can't have these sorts of things. And that went viral. There's already, you know, reports of sort of localized outbreaks to different housing centers at the University of North Carolina. And there's just, I think, a strong suspicion that as the students come back, campuses are just going to be in too much danger of becoming hotspots for obvious reasons, to make it realistic. And there are some people that say, well, you know, did the Big Ten and the Pac-12 maybe jump the gun? Should they have waited to see what it would be like when the students came back? There may also be other people who eventually say, well, the Big Ten and the Pac-12 actually were, you know, sort of ahead of the curve. They didn't take that gamble, and it proved wise not to. But I think ultimately there is, I mean, if you're asking me just personally as somebody who kind of lives in this world, I would be very surprised if there's college sports this fall. As we get into the winter, the possibility of you know, salvaging a basketball season, things like that, I think we can start to maybe see some solutions forming around winter sports and certainly moving into the spring. But I would be very surprised if we see college sports in the fall.
Hmm. So the impact of this decision is far-reaching, but let's start with these athletic programs and the teams themselves. I mean, what questions are they trying to navigate right now?
Well, you know, really, in a way, the same questions that kind of everyone else is in one sense, which is the, you know, the health, the public health aspect of it. You know, how often can they test their athletes? How do they keep them safe? You know, do they need to keep them kind of sequestered in smaller workout groups when they do work out? Because obviously the athletes, even the ones whose seasons may have just been postponed or canceled, they'll be coming back to school very soon if they're not already at their respective campuses because the fall semester is beginning. And so they'll be trying to figure out, A, what can those sports do? You know, and I think that's something the NCAA is going to have to offer more guidance on. And they've already offered some, and sports have basically kind of, I think, reverted more than anything else into something resembling kind of an off-season workout schedule. But then also B, as kind of the science, the testing, that, you know, that's a big thing. The FDA gave emergency approval to what appears to be an accurate and more rapid saliva-based test, which a lot of people think could be a real game changer for college in general, and therefore college sports, because it could allow much more active monitoring of large communities in a more real-time way. And it's just sort of, for college athletics, figuring out what they can still do from a workout perspective, what the calendar is going to look like, because, you know, if you're a college football coach, for example, and you are hoping to have a spring season, well, you're going to want to know as soon as possible when that spring season potentially starts and what it looks like, and therefore what you need to prepare your players for and what your timeline is for doing that. And then, you know, the last thing I would say too, there's been a lot of talk about this as well. I think there's a lot of concern about the mental health and welfare of athletes, because these are athletes that have, in all likelihood, many of them competed their entire lives. They have built their lives around, you know, the calendar of a season and when it starts, when it finishes, what they do in the off season, et cetera. Suddenly you're taking that away from them. And, you know, these are still just young people who are still growing, still maturing. You know, I think there's a real desire to make sure that athletes who need it have the support if they feel like if they suffer basically any sort of mental distress through this period, because all of a sudden they're kind of their whole routine and their life have been kind of uprooted in a way that they just can't possibly control.
Let's talk about one of the biggest parts of this, and that's the money. I've got just about a minute left, but when we look at the schools in the Big Ten, how much of a school's total revenue is typically brought in by athletics?
Yeah, well, so it's typically the forgive me, I'll try to make this answer as short as possible, but it is kind of complex. Most athletics departments, certainly the Big Ten, operate independent of the university financially. They make nearly all or all of their own money. They take very little institutional money, and they give some back via different means, but really what they are is more than anything self-sufficient. That's been driven by the explosion in particular in media and television revenues in the last 10 to 15 years. And so like at Indiana, for example, I think the Indiana takes a small amount from the university and student fees. Other than that, it gets nothing from the university. And that's off a budget of between $125 and $130 million a year. Hmm. Of course, within the university structure, I think Indiana's got an endowment of $2.5 billion. So that's a small amount of money relative to the entire Indiana university system, but it's a lot for a self-sustaining organization that may now be facing, you know, revenue losses north of 50, 60, even $70 million. In the most recent figures we have, fiscal year 2019, Indiana reported slightly more than $80 million in football and men's basketball specific revenue off a budget of about $126 million. So you're talking about not just, this isn't just necessarily, hey, the good days may be over for good. Your leisure spending needs to cut back kind of losses. We're talking about potentially well over half your budget disappearing. And that's going to be the case at every Big Ten school. In some ways, it's even going to be worse for schools like Michigan and Ohio State that count so much more heavily on game day revenues from much larger, more expensive, more, you know, well-attended football games. You know, these Big Ten schools are going to be facing massive shortfalls. The Pac-12 actually set up a loan program that will allow its schools to withdraw as much as $83 million this year, basically using its TV rights deal, its current TV broadcast deal with ESPN and Fox as collateral. $83 million, they don't have to take all 83, but that's the maximum they can withdraw to cover these losses. And then the idea is to basically sort of pay it back over a period of maybe even 10, 12 years. Mm. I think there's going to be more schools and more conferences looking at that sort of thing, because if not, we're not just talking about, you know, having to furlough some staff or cut back, trim belts. We're talking about mass cutting of sports. We're talking about mass layoffs within the departments, and not the coaches making hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars a year, but just the people who work the $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year jobs. And it would just contribute to the deepening economic concern for college towns that are losing jobs and losing small businesses and really struggling during this time as well.
All right. Zach Osterman covers IU athletics and college sports for the Indy Star. Zach, thanks for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, as always.
And when we come back after a quick break, we'll be talking with the athletic directors from both Purdue and IU to talk about how they're navigating the postponed season. If you have questions or comments for them, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. We're back in 90 seconds. I'm Matt Pelser. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today we're talking about the Big Ten's decision to postpone the fall sports season until at least the spring semester. We'd love your questions and comments on the topic. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail, including your first name and where you're calling from, at 866-476-3881. We're joined now by two Big Ten athletic directors to talk about how a postponed season is impacting their athletes, their programs, and the greater communities. Mike Babinski is the Vice President and Director of Intercollegiate Athletics at Purdue University. Mike, glad to have you with us today.
Thanks, Matt. Appreciate the opportunity.
Scott Dolson is the Vice President and Director of Intercollegiate Athletics at Indiana University. Scott, we appreciate you taking the time to join us.
Hey, thanks, Matt. Appreciate being here as well.
So, Mike, we'll start with you. College-level conferences have been wrestling with how to handle fall sports for months now. Can you put the Big Ten's decision to postpone the season all together into perspective for us? How big of a decision was this?
It was a monumental decision, Matt, to be honest with you. We got myself, our colleagues around the Big Ten, the conference office, and innumerable people on each of our campuses had worked for months to put together a series of protocols and alternate strategies and plans to try to coexist with the virus in the hopes of having fall sports seasons. In doing so, we wanted to provide, obviously, those opportunities from a competitive standpoint for our athletes, but also to try and preserve our financial viability. And when the decision was ultimately made, all of that sort of came came crashing down there in the course of that one announcement. So it was a very, very big decision, and one that, you know, we're all dealing with sort of the ramifications and trying to pick up the pieces, and will be for some time, I believe.
Scott Dolson, the commissioner of the Big Ten, Kevin Warren, made the announcement to postpone the season earlier this month. Did he make that decision independently, or are there other people or groups that were involved in that decision?
Well, Matt, let me first of all, I just wanted to thank Mike Babinski, who's on the call, obviously with me right now. But with my transition, I assumed the athletic director role on July 1. And other than Fred Glass, my predecessor, there's been no one who's been more helpful as a colleague than Mike. So I just wanted to make sure a lot of fans wouldn't know that or wouldn't understand, because we're so competitive in the Big Ten and obviously the IU-Purdue rivalry. But Mike's just been fantastic, and just want to make certain to point that out. Relative to Commissioner Warren, from the very beginning, as we entered into this unprecedented time, you know, he had several groups that he'd been working with in terms of forming a medical advisory group that he really hinged a lot of, put a lot into with them, and really listened to them a lot. As Mike indicated, as athletic directors, we've met every morning. In fact, we were joking when we were waiting to get on the call that this is the first morning that we had not met in months. In fact, generally speaking, I think the athletic directors meet in person about four times a year, and I've had over 100 meetings with my colleagues in the Big Ten since I was named AD in March. So, you know, Commissioner Warren had a lot of people that he listened to, but the end result was that he really wanted to, which we all agree with, listening to the best medical experts we could, and then funnel that information up through the presidents and chancellors, and that's ultimately where the decision would lie.
Mike Babinski, it's one thing to think that something like this might be coming down. It's a little different when it actually happens. What was your reaction when the final decision was made?
Well, it was absolutely that sort of stark reality that the eventualities that we had planned for, or, I mean, it's one thing to plan for them. It's another thing to live them. You know, as I told our staff, as this decision was happening, we've moved from the hypothetical to the real at this point. So we now need to pull out all of those plans and contingencies, particularly from an operational and financial perspective, and start to execute on some of those. And that's not necessarily good news, but it's reality. It's where we are. And, you know, we respect the decision for sure. We understand the basis upon which it was made. And now we've got to find a way to work through it with all that comes with that. So we are, you know, we're as I mentioned earlier, we're going to be in that process for some time. This isn't something you solve in the course of a couple of days or a couple of weeks. It's going to be months and potentially years in the sort of the return to a normal state of affairs business from an operational perspective.
I mean, there have been some conferences, though, that followed suit and did the same thing, postponed the seasons. Others will continue to play. Do you wish that the decision had been delayed at all, or was this the right move at the right time?
Well, I think that's going to be something for the history books and others to debate, probably without ever coming to a hard and fast conclusion. But I know this, my own preference would have been that we move on and continue to try to see if our protocols would have been able to be successful over an extended period of time. You know, we had moved into a rhythm where, you know, we have now tested our last 450 plus tests that we performed on our athletes and coaches and others that are sort of in that close contact group have all been negative. We haven't had a single positive test recently. So I think what we were doing was beginning to really be effective. And would we have liked to have seen that play out a little longer before the decision was ultimately made? From my perspective, yes. I still, as I said, I respect and understand how and why it got done. But my personal preference would have been that we give it a little bit more time to see if it was feasible to move on.
Scott, I want your perspective, too. What was your reaction?
Yeah, just like Mike, you know, when we worked so hard for so many months with so many different contingencies and then at the same time, you know, hopeful that we could get move forward and for it to change so quickly, obviously it wasn't what we all had planned for or hoped for, but again, we respect the decision and felt like at the end of the day that there was too much uncertainty, as the commissioner outlined, and felt like really to dig into, and that's what we're doing now, is looking forward and saying, okay, whether it's the testing issues, the contact tracing issues, and some of the residual effects, how can we make certain that the same things that caused us to postpone, what has to change for us to get going again at some point? And that's kind of the next thing. And so, yeah, it certainly was something that, although we planned for it, we had hoped that wouldn't happen, but when it did, now we have to move forward, and as leaders have to make certain we're playing this hand we've been dealt the best we can. And that's the situation we're all in right now.
Scott, in the last segment with Zach Osterman from the Indy Star, he raised the point that leadership within college athletics tends to be pretty decentralized. Has that influenced how decisions have been made in the last few months?
Yeah, you can see that, how it's played out, and particularly with college football, with it being just not one central body that really governs it. And that's where you see where there's you know, some conferences still moving on and others not. And obviously for the future, it certainly would be better to have a unified front. But at the same time for us, you know, we're the Big Ten, and we're a close-knit conference. It's one of the things that's been so impressive for me as I enter into this role, just the collegial feel. And as Mike can tell you, because he's been involved at this level longer than me, the collaboration, the really just helping each other, all have common goals and values and trying to make things happen so that, you know, we can control what we can control. And hopefully we can, as I said, look ahead and plan for getting things going as quickly as we can and dealing with the situation we're dealing with. But as a whole across the country, it sure would be nice at some point to have a more unified front so that it's added to the confusion, the fact that different conferences are doing different things.
We're talking with Scott Dolson, the Vice President and Director of Intercollegiate Athletics at Indiana University, as well as Mike Babinski, Vice President and Director of Intercollegiate Athletics at Purdue University, today about the decision to cancel or postpone the fall sports season. And, of course, that includes college football within the Big Ten. And, Mike, of course, there's the athletes. How did they take the news?
It took it tough, as you might expect, Matt. They weren't shocked, because I think all along our coaches and others, and we had delivered the message to them that this was a sort of a day-by-day evaluation, and one that we didn't know what direction it would go in. But I know when I spoke to the three fall sport teams that were here physically on campus, our women's soccer, volleyball, and football teams, collectively the day of the announcement, it was a very somber and quiet room. They weren't excited to hear it. There was a sense of, I think, disappointment for sure. But the message that we've tried to deliver from that point forward, and even at that moment, was, hey, this is, you know, in life things happen that aren't always ideal or what you'd hope for. You've got to be able to respond and find opportunity and find ways to take full advantage of whatever your circumstances might be. And I think our coaches and other support folks have done a great job of trying to, you know, get our young folks pointed in that direction, and they've in general responded really well. I'm really proud of what they've done and how they're doing it, and I look forward to that continuing to play out here during this semester.
I mean, Scott, athletes in the Big Ten have spent a lot of their lifetime working to get to that level. There's a discipline, a routine, a rhythm there. How does this change an athlete's day-to-day life, this postponement?
It was big. As you said, they are used to routine. And you know, we really, and I commend our coaches and staff, just like Mike said, that, you know, again, given the card that we were dealt, the extreme disappointment and just kind of the uncertainty, you know, what we really tried to tell them was that, you know, we talk about health and safety being number one, and, you know, those aren't just words. You know, we put our money where our mouth is. And the fact that we've postponed just really reemphasized that. And what we want to do is, and what we've tried to do is make certain that they try to get into some continued routine, even though it is different. And so they are able to continue to work out, obviously not at the level that they would have been in terms of full contact, but keeping connected has been really since the pandemic started, but now most importantly as the fall, as we've changed and postponed the season, really keeping into that rhythm, keeping working out, keeping physically and mentally engaged has been a real challenge for us and something that's really, really important. And I'm proud of our kids, how they've responded, even with that disappointment. And they've realized that we have to use this as an opportunity and to continue to work out and to be ready when we're called upon again to play. So, we're excited about moving forward, but it has been a big, big change.
Mike, there's just too much to think about right now, but I'm sure some people have thought about this. I mean, how much do you think this is going to impact the attention that some athletes who might have been hoping to go pro might get? I mean, are some of those dreams maybe out the window for some of these people?
Well, yeah, I think that is a potential outcome for sure, and one that we want to do everything we can to try and avoid. And we've talked about that within the Big Ten group, particularly from the football perspective. We're working really hard to try to relocate our season from the fall to the second semester, so sometime in the January and shortly thereafter time frame, which would then provide our student-athletes, our football athletes, an opportunity to show the NFL and what they might be capable of. Also talking about trying to find ways to maybe even put together a Big Ten-specific tryout evaluation combine, that the NFL holds to make sure that our young folks have that chance to be in the game and to take full advantage of the opportunities that would likely have come their way had we had a normal season. So we're very well aware of that. It's a commitment we've made to all of our young folks that we'll do everything we can to prepare them for whatever the next step in their life is, whether it be a career, grad school, or professional sports opportunity, and we want to make sure we deliver on that in every way we can.
Scott, there's a rare heart condition that could be linked to the coronavirus. It's called myocarditis. That's caused some concern lately. It's been found in a few Big Ten Conference athletes, and it's unclear what the long-term impacts are. How are you medically monitoring your teams right now?
We're really, really fortunate in across the Big Ten, first of all, that the medical experts and the resources we provide all of our teams are really, really outstanding and as good as it gets. And then specifically here at IU, our longtime sports medicine doctor, his name's Dr. Larry Rink, and he's a leader really in the country in sports cardiology. So he really has been on the forefront of looking into all the residual effects of COVID in terms of the most important thing, Matt, is in terms of the return to play. You never want to put someone back in competition or in practice that hasn't had all of the complete diagnostics and analytics to make sure that they're 100%. And so for me and my position, and I don't want to speak for Mike, but I'm sure he feels the same way, if you have 100% confident in your medical team and your professionals, your experts, then those things really take care of itself in terms of you trust them and you let them guide you. And again, specifically for us, Dr. Rink and his expertise in this area, I'm just confident that he knows when to say go and when to say we need to look a little deeper, and we trust his judgment.
Mike, some say a traditional season would have kept student athletes, busy and in a routine and therefore would have minimized any potential spread. Are there still expectations around health and safety protocol for athletes right now, even without a season ahead?
Absolutely. We have absolutely stuck with the very same sets of protocols and testing regimens, quarantine, isolation, if in fact necessary. We've been fortunate. We haven't had any of that in the last several weeks now, but all those are in place and across all of our programs. So while we're not competing this fall, everybody will be in some sort of training/practice/preseason mode, and all of that brings with it a requirement in today's world, at least for the foreseeable future, to have a testing routine and a rhythm to that makes sure that you're keeping people safe and preventing any further or unnecessary spread of the virus. So, yeah, we're continuing to do all of that.
What's the protocol if an athlete or even a staff member tests positive?
Well, we immediately isolate that individual, and then also at the same time go through a contact tracing exercise, which is prescribed by the county health officials as to how that gets done in each region within the Big Ten footprint. And my guess is that Scott's down in the Bloomington area is probably close to ours, but may not be identical. But we go through that exercise and then determine who the close contacts were and quarantine those individuals for 14 days. The isolation is a 10-day period, and then everybody has to go through a return to activity medical protocol, and it includes cardiac workups and all sorts of other things to make sure that we're not putting anybody at any risk if we go back to full exertion type activities.
There is a lot more to talk about. We will keep the conversation going after a quick break. We're talking with the athletic directors of Purdue and IU about the Big Ten's decision to postpone fall sports. And if you would like to jump into the conversation, we'd love to hear your voice. You can leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881, 866-476-3881, or you can just engage with us on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. I'm Matt Pelser, back with the conversation in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Back now to our discussion on the Big Ten's postponement of the fall sports season. We're joined now by two Big Ten athletic directors. Scott Dolson is the vice president and director of intercollegiate athletics at Indiana University. Mike Babinski is the vice president and director of intercollegiate athletics at Purdue University. And let's see, we're going to start with Scott in this segment. So, Scott, these athletes only have so many years of eligibility to play at this level. How has this situation impacted how eligibility works?
Well, Matt, that was one of the first questions that as we the decision was made to postpone fall sports, where our student athletes really wanted to know just what you're asking. And the NCAA this past Friday through the Board of Governors did announced that there would not be any eligibility taken away for any student athlete this year, that their season would be impacted due to COVID. So that was a silver lining when we did decide to postpone. And even if we do, or hopefully when we do get some semblance of the season back, and hopefully it'll be a productive season for football and other fall sports, that they still will not lose this year of eligibility if it's not quite as meaningful as it would have been. And so the good news is, I guess, on a silver lining standpoint, is that our student athletes will not be losing a year of eligibility this year and can participate next year as if they were in the same year as they are this year.
Mike, after the announcement to postpone, we saw some players speak out, and the beginning of the hashtag We Want to Play campaign. And the campaign calls not just for the ability to play, but also for, and there are four tiers here, four parts to this, the establishment of universal mandated health and safety procedures and protocols to protect collegiate athletes against COVID-19 throughout all NCAA conferences, that's one. Two, giving players the opportunity to opt out of the season if they don't want to play. Three, guaranteed eligibility whether an athlete plays or opts out. And four, the creation of a college football players association. Mike, how do you respond to the hashtag We Want to Play campaign?
Well, there's a lot there wrapped up in those four items, some of which I think we're all over already. You know, as Scott alluded to earlier, we were fortunate in the Big Ten and the other conferences that are sort of our peers around the country, we provide a really comprehensive set of medical protocols and support and resources for them. And so I feel very confident that we have and will continue to satisfy that issue on a very progressive and complete basis. The eligibility issue, Scott just spoke to that, and that's being worked on or being worked through right now. And I think we've been very fair in how that is playing out. The trying to remember what the other one was. The Well, I'll jump to the last one. The big one is the Players Association, and that's that's a really complicated question that I don't know that we have enough time here today to delve into all the ramifications of that. I mean, clearly, there's been an increasing voice around players' opportunities to, for instance, capitalize on their name, their image, their likeness, and that is working its way through the NCAA system right now. And I would expect that a year from now, that will be happening, unless something completely turns left. Lots of states have already passed legislation in that regard, and I think the NCAA is moving very deliberately but expeditiously in that same direction. So that will happen. The larger issues of players' rights, et cetera, I think what happens there is there's a huge information gap as to what really gets done for and on behalf of our student-athletes today. And I think we have all suffered from doing a really poor job of messaging and being clear about all the different things that are already done purely for the support and betterment of the experience that our athletes have. And that doesn't mean we're perfect. I think it continues to evolve and needs to continually be objectively evaluated. But there's an awful lot that's really good about what we do these days. And I'd sure like that to be a little bit more of the conversation as we all move forward.
If you would like to jump into the conversation, you can do what a listener named Scott did and leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. Again, 866-476-3881. Let's listen to Scott's voicemail now.
My name's Scott Avery, and I have a question. How does the suspension affect the students' scholarship finances?
Scott, would you like to respond to Scott?
Sure.
What do we know about how scholarships are doing?
Sure, great question. It does not impact their scholarship. They still, and in fact, we've talked about it. I know Mike and I, as our fellow AD colleagues, is that, we're still in school and they're going to class and all systems go in terms of that. And so the scholarship is still intact. And then the other thing that the NCAA did announce last week is that, for the returning student athletes who did not lose their eligibility, so particularly the ones who were going to graduate this year or were going to exhaust their eligibility, they can come back next year and keep their scholarship, and it does not count towards a particular team's scholarship cap. So that means we can still sign a freshman class. And so it's a little complicated to explain, but if we had 10 senior football players that would have exhausted their eligibility this year, then next year they can still come back and play, but their scholarship won't count against our 85 cap, so we can still sign 10 freshmen. So the NCAA has been very helpful in making certain that the scholarship situation is secure, and it's really business as normal moving forward. And hopefully academically we started classes yesterday, and all our student-athletes are raring to go and hopefully having a great semester.
Scott, I want to stay with you. Back when, the pandemic was sort of taking hold and people started looking at the long term, what I kept hearing with regard to sports, specifically college sports, is if this impacts football, it's going to be bad financially. Can you talk about the financial impact that this postponement is going to have?
Yeah, there's no question about it. I mean, we're no different than Purdue or really other schools, as Mike said, in our level of play, that 98% of our revenue comes from football and men's basketball, and is either directly from football or men's basketball, or it's driven. We obviously, just like Purdue, have a lot of generous donors who make great gifts to us every year to help fund our scholarships and other projects, but really football and men's basketball even drive those. So it's just as you said, we've been studying this and looking at it and trying to prepare for all contingencies, knowing that it's going to be a challenge. We're still trying to quantify it now, particularly as it relates to, television revenues, which is such a big driver, trying to figure out how we can mitigate that as best as possible with the second semester season, as Mike indicated. And so we'll just continue to really get as much information as we can You know, we're taking action, trying to minimize the impact as best we can in the department. But again, just like Mike, trying to make certain that we really do two things. We want to mitigate this year as best we can, knowing that it's going to be there's going to be a loss, a significant loss. Yeah, but more importantly, as we come out of this year, making certain that we can have a very financially stable department moving forward. And those are the things that we're really trying to do is get through this season, but looking ahead for the following year, that we're stable and able to have a well-rounded, supportive program that supports all of our student-athletes' needs, really athletically, academically, and personally.
We're talking to the athletic directors of Purdue and IU, of course, Mike Babinski and Scott Dolson, respectively, and we're talking about the decision to postpone the fall sports season. So, Mike, I mean, what are some of the ways that have been tossed around to mitigate those losses?
Well, it's really sort of a tapestry of different things. There is no one answer that I don't think any of us have to try and solve this. When you have issues that are of the magnitude that Scott alluded to, whether it be $50 million or $60 million or whatever the ultimate revenue shortfall is, there is no one thing that you can do to offset that. So we've begun obviously shaving operational costs in every possible way with the goal of not adversely impacting the support we provide our student athletes from a academic support perspective, from a medical support perspective, from a mental health perspective, from a nutrition perspective. You know, we want to continue to do all of that in the way that we committed to when we brought our student athletes here to Purdue. But other things, you know, things around the fringes of operations obviously are going to be severely cut back. In addition, we're all very much across Kearney Collegiate Athletics, people are a significant portion of our operating budget. That's just a fact. We're a people-based operation, and so you can't make significant moves or swings financially without, unfortunately, ultimately affecting people. So we just announced, actually, either right at the beginning of this call or right before, we announced a series of personnel adjustments and actions that we've had to take at this point in time, including ranging from reductions in force to furloughs to work schedule reductions to pay reductions across the board. It will affect every single person in our department. Nobody was spared the opportunity to sort of share the collective pain here, and we had no choice but to do that. So, you know, it's a wide ranging set of strategies and actions that will continue to evolve, and we continue to look for things and opportunities, because at the end of the day, we'll likely still come up with some sort of a gap that we'll have to find a way to bridge with a financial instrument of some kind to try and get us to the other side of this without as Scott mentioned, without a long-term impact. You know, we don't want this to be an anchor that we wear for multiple years. We want to get back to it in a competitive and sort of full-on way as soon as we get, the smoke clears here and we're back in business.
Scott, football has gotten a lot of attention in the past few weeks, and it's true that it's a big economic engine for a lot of other sports. Are all sports going to be sort of equally impacted by this belt tightening, or are some of them just going to face some steeper challenges?
Yeah, really, as Mike said, it's really department-wide, and everybody's sharing the pain. So obviously, football is such a huge driver, and it was such a huge part of the impact of the decision that was made to postpone the fall sports. But, we've taken measures already and continuing to lay out our financial mitigation plan. And Mike said it really well. There's just not one silver bullet. That this is an unsolvable situation right now. There's not one silver bullet that can fix it. You know, we cut 10% out of our operating budget in June, looking at this fiscal year, just planning for what might happen. And that was a big hit just then. But now, sort of the second phase, knowing now that the fall sports been postponed, you know, we've got every option on the table and trying to pull out every tool we can to try to mitigate this. And then again, hopefully, like I said earlier, we've got to ensure that in the future we can be viable and that we can continue to do the things we do for our student athletes. And so that's a big part of our planning.
Scott, what about the greater community? I'm in Bloomington a lot, and I, you know, I'll drive by the stadium and drive by those businesses that are nearby the stadium who sort of count on a football season happening and could never imagine it not happening. This is going to impact them quite a bit, and they might already be having a hard time. Are you hearing from any of those community members?
Yeah, I actually attended the Bloomington Economic Development Corporation board meeting last week, and we had a great talk and really just wanted to make certain that they felt our support. And, you know, we're teammates, you know, as we're struggling, we know they are struggling as well, and try to do everything we can to just show that partnership. And the good thing is with our students here on campus, and at least, and let's hope that continues, that they were able to kind of come out of a tough summer with having the density here to help support the local business. But yeah, it's been a, you know, a challenging time for everybody, just outside of sports. But then when you factor in the reality is that we're not going to have fall sports, we empathize with our community and certainly want to continue to partner with them and help in any way we can, for sure.
Mike, there's a lot of talk about moving these programs to the spring, of course. We've been mentioning that quite a bit. And if we imagine that makes sense from a public health perspective come spring, I don't know what else needs to be taken into consideration.
Well, from our side, you know, as you look at the particular, you know, focus on the football perspective or the football issue, you know, football in and of itself is a massive undertaking. Lots of people, lots of moving parts. So finding a way to lay that on top of a spring or winter season that's already got, let's hope, basketballs and lots of other things going, creates just a, you know, a heavy lift from an operational and practical perspective. The other reality that we have in the Big Ten footprint is during that period of time in our geography, weather is not exactly favorable for playing outdoors. You know,
indeed.
January, February, sometimes even into March can bring lots of different possibilities. You know, if you look at other schools and states in our region, Michigan, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Nebraska, you know, they have some fairly harsh weather in those times of the year. So figuring out how all that might work together and how that might be able to be solved has been the source of lots of conversation and ongoing conversation. You know, do we, for instance, play in dome stadiums like in Indianapolis, like in Detroit, like in Minneapolis that are in our footprint? You know, can we take dates that where the NFL isn't playing and play a couple of games on a weekend or a Friday night, Saturday, whatever it might be? I think being creative, being in partnership with our television colleagues, like, for instance, the Fox people, the Big Ten Network people, ESPN, others that are important to us, you know, trying to bring lots of people to the table here to plan out a structure that might be feasible. And we think it is. We think it can certainly get done if we put our mind to it. Doesn't mean it won't be complicated, but we think it is doable.
Scott, in about 30 seconds in this next semester without a fall season, what are your priorities right now?
Our priorities for sure are keeping our student athletes focused and connected, making certain that both physically and mentally they're engaged and doing all we can to really keep it as normal as possible in an extremely not normal time. And that's really our goal, is we want to make certain that they're focused on controlling what they can control, taking care of their academics, staying in shape, working out, and really in a good position from a mental standpoint.
Well, this has been a great conversation. I want to thank our guests for taking the time today. Scott Dolson is Vice President and Director of Intercollegiate Athletics at Indiana University. Scott, thank you so much.
Thank you, Matt. Really appreciate it.
Mike Babinski is Vice President and Director of Intercollegiate Athletics at Purdue University. Great to have you with us today, Mike.
Same here, Matt. Very much appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Thanks to Maggie Galon and Drew Dodlin, our producers. Scott Cameron's our managing editor. Adam Gross is our technical director and composed our theme. I'm Matt Pelser. Thanks for listening today. This is All In.